It's time to explore wrestling's past and potential future with your weekly dose of a segment we call What If, only found here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, well, it is time to talk about What If. And as always, every week, if you're listening to this, then you're a patron of the show. Thank you so much for being a patron of the show and in the raw tier and higher. You guys get this exclusive show that's available to no one else. So I think that's pretty cool. And as always, we've got Anthony DeMarco this week to talk about a topic of what if the WWE draft slash extension slash whatever they call it now never happened. What would WWE look like? So we're going to cover that. And welcome to the show, Anthony. How's it going?
I'm really excited for this show because, you know, we've talked a lot about how when we each respectively started watching WWE and you really grew up with the Ruthless Aggression, the Attitude Era. And while I started watching wrestling on a weekly basis at the tail end of the Attitude Era, I really kind of grew into my own during the Ruthless Aggression Era, almost in sync with the brand extension or draft, or one of the many names it's had over the course of the years, came into effect. So this is a topic that I guess for me is quite special in a lot of ways and nostalgic.
Well, yeah, no, it is. And I, you know, again, I'm about 10 years ahead of when you started watching, roughly. I mean, I started in mid-90s. But at the same time, this was a time when, you know, the WWE draft at the time, or again, I think they called it the brand extension at the very beginning, slash shakeup. And it felt cool. Like, I mean, I remember thinking like, oh, wow, this is going to be like awesome. You're going to have two different brands with two different identities. At least that was the goal. And I was hoping that beyond just, well, they're different because they have a different roster. Like, and that's how it often feels today, is that it's only different because there are just different people on it, instead of really identifying or creating their own identity beyond just names, like maybe the feel or production of the show. And yet today, I think, is just only defined and differentiated by the different names, which is, I don't know, I have mixed feelings on that. But back then, the shows felt different beyond the names. They did have their own identities. I mean, they had their own Raw GM. They had a SmackDown GM. The shows for Raw was more entertainment-based. SmackDown was more wrestling. And today, there is some of that still lingering at times. But how did you feel initially when the brand split happened or the brand extension happened? How did you feel? Did you think, you know, this is going to blow up? This is going to be a great idea? How did you feel at the beginning?
Well, it was kind of akin to the invasion angle, right? The, you know, one side versus the other side. And to be honest, my favorite storylines over the years have been kind of faction versus faction, like Shield versus Evolution, or Evolution against like group of Babyface X on Monday Night Raw, that type of stuff. Or, you know, the Alliance versus Team WWF, or the corporate ministry against the union. I love those types of programs and angles. So when they went ahead with this, and I think people forget that the original concept was that Raw was owned by Ric Flair and SmackDown was owned by Vince McMahon, and there was a power struggle over ownership of the company as a whole. And they really played off that and were completely going to divide the roster in two. So I was very intrigued. And as we remember, the first overall selection to SmackDown was The Rock. And it was a big deal. And I can't remember, maybe you could shed some light on this, because I don't remember Stone Cold Steve Austin being involved in that draft in any capacity. So was this after he had walked out, or was he away? Like, what was the exact date that they had the inaugural WWE draft?
The first draft was March 25th, 2002. They called it the WWF Draft Lottery at that time. And as I'm reading, just to kind of refresh my memory, and you're right that the walkout did happen, but it happened in, I thought it was the summer of June of 2002, when he was supposed to face Brock Lesnar in Atlanta, Georgia, in the King of the Ring qualifier, I believe. And I think Bubba Ray Dudley was the replacement. But nonetheless, and I'm looking through the notes here, It says that Austin was considered a free agent in the draft by Linda McMahon, ultimately choosing to sign to Raw. And I believe it was, and this actually took place in Albany, New York. He chose to sign with Ric Flair on April Fool's. And he, you know, he originally said that, okay, you know, I'm going to sign with SmackDown, and told Vince McMahon, there's one other thing I got to tell you about this contract. And tonight, April Fool's, and he gives him a stunner. So that was, he was considered a free agent by Linda McMahon. So I don't know why Linda McMahon decided he was a free agent, but Austin, I think, was the right candidate to be on Raw. I mean, Raw, when you look at Raw, and he's synonymous with Monday Night Raw, just as The Rock is oftentimes synonymous with SmackDown. So that, if you ask me why he was a free agent, I don't know, but it was decided by Linda McMahon.
If I'm not mistaken, was it not because he in real life walked out following WrestleMania 18, but it was kind of smoothed over relatively fast, and this was a way they could cover up for it?
Could be. That makes sense, yeah.
And I think that was the cool part of this whole concept. And I remember thinking at the time, like, okay, so we're going to have, like, The Rock and I forget who the second overall pick to SmackDown was. I believe it may have been Kurt Angle. And they're going to be, like, exclusive to SmackDown. And they're going to be going up against Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker, which is weird to think of him on Raw because I always thought of him as, like, the face of SmackDown in a lot of ways. And then, like, you know, the championships started becoming exclusive to either shows. Eventually, we had the Intercontinental go over to Raw and the U.S. go over to SmackDown. They each got their own tag team belts eventually. And I really thought that it was a brilliant concept because it gave you a reason to watch both shows. Because I always felt that, maybe not in the Attitude Era, but once they started exiting the Attitude Era, and I think it's fair to say that by the time 2002 came around, it was pretty much full steam ahead with Ruthless Aggression Era. SmackDown became the B show when they both coexisted with the same roster. Because, you know the major storylines were going to be pushed ahead on Monday Night Raw. And then SmackDown, you would usually get, like, the U.S. Championship and whatnot. Or back in the day, maybe the European title. So I said to myself, like, this gives me a reason to watch the product two times a week. And I will never have that feeling like, oh, okay, well, if I miss SmackDown, it's not the end of the world. They'll just recap it on Raw. Because back then, when they first started this, they wouldn't even review the opposite show. It was as if they completely did not exist. Like, now, like, oftentimes, like, you'll pop on SmackDown and they'll talk about what happened on Raw 4 days prior and vice versa. Or, you know, sometimes we'll see Corey Graves on either show. Or on pay-per-views, Michael Cole will call Raw matches. Back then, it was not like that. Jerry Lawler and JR did not acknowledge that Taz and Michael Cole existed. And as you said, in real life, there were different writing teams. I think at this point, Brian Gewirtz, if I'm not mistaken, Gewirtz, was writing for Raw, and Paul Heyman was writing for SmackDown. And, you know, they've said, you know, like, out of character, that they were competing against one another. Obviously, Brian G, I'll just go with that, it was more writing for television and for entertainment, as he now writes for The Rock. And Paul Heyman was, like, a wrestling purist coming from ECW. So I just think in a lot of ways, it was about creating internal competition and kind of piggybacking off of the real-life competition of WCW versus WWF in the 90s.
There was a real rivalry there, and it was cool as a fan to see the brands have their own feel, their own identity, as we said. And it wasn't just about the rosters. It was about, like you said, the writing team was different. The feel of the show was different. Again, remember, we didn't have a three-hour Monday Night Raw, so that was much more palatable as well. And it felt like they had their own worlds, and I loved that they had their own worlds. They were very strict in general. I mean, there were some occasional exceptions and kind of head-scratching moments, nothing like today. Where they actually adhered to their own rules of, if you're on this brand, you stay on this brand. And like you said, they didn't review the rival's show, which is why today, whenever they try to manufacture the whole rivalry between brands, it is laughable. And I'm being kind when I say that, because like you said, there are announcers swapping teams. Maybe they're invoking the wild card rule. I don't know. But it's there's no rivalry. The fans know there's no rivalry. Fans know that nobody – fans don't care about, you know, particular brands today because the show is developed the same. It's produced the same. It feels the same in general. Yes, SmackDown is a little more wrestling heavy. It's always kind of been its own identity. But outside of that, everything else feels the exact same. They open the show saying the same things about the Thunderdome. The announcers say the same corporate lines. Like, there is nothing differentiating the shows today other than black, red and blue. Like, that's kind of it. And Raw is 3 hours, as we know. But I loved how, like you said, that they did feel like their own worlds. And let's jump into the name of the show, though. Like, what if this didn't happen? Like, what if this didn't happen? What if the WWE never decided to do a brand split and continued with the Raw storylines are just, or the SmackDown storylines are just kind of what happens on Raw, and it's a cycle that keeps going on? And what would have happened? Do you think talent would have gotten the same spotlight? Some talent would or wouldn't have? In general, what do you think would have happened?
Well, number one, there would have never been a World Heavyweight Championship, or more recent, there would never have been a Universal Championship, because, you know, they made the decision to go with a world title exclusive to both shows. And I never minded that, because they were their own separate worlds, but it only works when they are their separate worlds. As soon as there's a bit of crossover, the title that isn't the WWE Championship takes a backseat, much like we saw what happened to the World Heavyweight Championship by the time 2010 rolled around. So I think that's the biggest part. And, you know, the first ever World Heavyweight Champion, Triple H, in the fall of 2002, we wouldn't have seen that. And I think in a lot of ways, we wouldn't have gotten several World Championship runs. Like, number one, I don't think Eddie Guerrero wins the WWE Championship, because over on Monday Night Raw, you had Triple H, who in a lot of ways was the world champion for 2.5 years straight. And you could be sure that he would have had a similar run with the WWE title if there was only one championship and no brand split. Throw Brock Lesnar into that mix, as he was WWE champion almost for 2 years straight from when he won the title in 2002 at SummerSlam until he left in 2004. Kurt Angle as well. Kurt Angle, I think, was owed a push, and he wouldn't have taken a backseat. So I think guys like Benoit and Guerrero, or later on John Bradshaw Layfield, wouldn't have gotten a chance, because they would have had all this talent at their disposal. Because think about what happened to SmackDown in 2004. You know, they tried Kurt Angle as the babyface. It didn't really work. And they had to push Eddie Guerrero up to that main event babyface status to, you know, compensate for that. Brock Lesnar leaves. You lose your top level heel. Okay, we'll push John Bradshaw Layfield there. But if you had the talent accessible over on Monday Night Raw, maybe you choose Chris Jericho to have that run, because he had already been world champion before and a proven main event babyface. Instead of John Bradshaw Layfield, you have Triple H, arguably the best heel in the company of all time. I think if there was no brand split, specifically in the Ruthless Aggression era, you would have seen just kind of a cycle of world champions of like Triple H, Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels, maybe Brock Lesnar until he left, perhaps The Undertaker. But I think a lot of the guys like, you know, Guerrero, Benoit, Layfield, I don't think they get a title run. And I think the next guy you would have probably see, you know, buck that trend would have probably been John Cena more towards 2005.
It was certainly, again, this was, to me, the biggest benefactor of the draft, and continues to be today, is the fact that you give more talent more opportunity. And I think that overshadows a lot of the arguments against doing the draft. As you said, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Chavo, guys like that back in the early 2000s would have never, ever gotten an opportunity, or at least if they did, it would have been a blink of an eye and then back to the mid card. I think the placement of those guys would have unfortunately been kind of mid upper card, occasionally touch the main event and get knocked back down. It would have been a rotating cast of the same guys trading the top championship. Now, the argument against doing a draft would be, well, you have fewer belts, which means the belts mean more. And that's always a good thing. I mean, anytime you have fewer of something, it automatically increases the value of it. I mean, that's just life. And so I think that would be the argument against doing the draft is, yeah, you wouldn't have maybe the talent get spotlighted that otherwise wouldn't have on a separate show, but the championships would have meant more because you weren't adding more belts to the mix. So what do you think about that?
I agree with that, unless you do the brand split as strict as they did in the early years. And I think that how exclusive all those championships were to their respective shows made them feel just as important as if there were less titles. And, you know, I think the two titles that often get like considered as like, you know, they're on equal footing, you should just like form them or unify them rather, is the US and the Intercontinental. And I remember, let's say, beyond the Attitude or the Ruthless Aggression era, when they really abolished the brand split, the US title kind of became a joke. It was almost like the European Championship in the late 90s. So I agree with what you're saying. But back in this time, you know, you had SmackDown and Raw, but each of those shows had their own undershows. Like Raw had Sunday Night Heat, and SmackDown had Velocity that aired late on Saturday nights. So I almost felt that because there were like their own exclusive worlds, and they both had their own secondary shows that in fact would be taped before those shows would go on the air. I remember going to Monday Night Raw and, you know, watching them record Sunday Night Heat. I didn't feel like the value of the championship suffered all that much. But to your point, as soon as they start loosening on some rules, yes, the championships do become a joke. And I use the World Heavyweight Championship as a perfect example of that. Like that title main evented WrestleMania, I believe, three separate times at 20, 21, and 24. And they pushed it in a lot of ways, especially when Triple H was holding it leading up to, let's say, his match against Batista at WrestleMania 21. They positioned the World Championship ahead of the WWE Championship. But as soon as you start mixing the worlds and acting as if there isn't a strict, I guess, divide between these two, like, differing planets almost, then absolutely the values do start to plummet. So while I agree in one way about, you know, if you have less of something, they're automatically worth more, you know, supply and demand, if you keep them completely separate, I think that it could have worked with two world championships, with two tag team championships, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to them abiding by their own rules. It's as simple as that. And today, we all know that they come up with their own rules. Things aren't explained. Somebody shows up, but they ignore that it happened. The Court of the Invitational is apparently the loosely guided overlord regulations right now of this is how we're going to do it. And they know they're going to violate it. And that becomes the whole issue. They want their cake and be able to eat it too. They just can't help themselves. For many years, I mean, this isn't just a 2020, 2021 issue. This has been for many years of the brand split, draft, whatever, that they haven't been able to stick to their own rules. And they want the brand split when it's convenient, and then they want to be able to violate the rules when it's also convenient. And not really abiding by their own restrictions, which dilutes the whole purpose of the draft. And also, I think, does a disservice to the stars on each brand when you have crossover just to have crossover, i.e., Survivor Series, when you
No.
have Raw and SmackDown. Now, they didn't this year label it as Raw versus SmackDown. I think they just said that, well, no, maybe they did. It was like the only time they said that Raw and SmackDown goes head to head or some nonsense. But they do it just to do it, and it's just built into the schedule. That's the worst way to do something, right? It's just like Hell in a Cell, this coming pay-per-view on June 20th. Well, why are we just building in Hell in a Cell to the schedule? It should be on its own merit, something that comes up when a rivalry is, I think, due for it, that it actually makes sense. And instead, they just build it in. And I think the Survivor Series pay-per-view is now my least favorite pay-per-view of the year because not only is it a forced rivalry, a forced brand split, head-to-head competition. It's also exhibitionary. There's no consequences for anyone to ever lose at all. There's no championships on the line. It is a just complete, you want to talk about destroying the draft that you've created. The Survivor Series now has become the atomic bomb to this, the draft. It has destroyed the purpose of the draft just for a, what, just to have a marketing slogan of the only time they go head to head, which is to me also a lie, by the way. They do it in the Rumble. They often do it at WrestleMania. Like, it is not the only, it's such a lie on its face. So I don't know. What do you think about the Survivor Series pay-per-view in its respect to the draft now?
It's so sad because I remember when I was a kid, in a lot of ways, Survivor Series was my favorite pay-per-view. And which is weird to say, because when you think of the big four, Survivor Series typically slides in number four. But I loved it because I loved the concept of the five-on-five elimination matches. I always thought it was awesome, and this is going back on my historic love for faction versus faction type of programs. And, you know, I love Team Austin versus Team Bischoff or Team Guerrero versus Team Angle, stuff like that. And I remember in 2005, they actually did Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, but it was a program that was built organically. And, you know, it started with Raw Homecoming and Bischoff turning out the lights. And, you know, we know how that story goes. Mm-hmm. Or let's say in 2016, when they restarted the brand split and they, you know, tried to build off Shane versus Stephanie, and they did it. I don't mind it in those capacities when it's kind of like an organic build to it. And I do find it cool once in a while. But when it's just built into the schedule, and we've talked about this before, you've essentially just turned Survivor Series into bragging rights. And I remember when they started bragging rights in, I think it was 2009, that's when I was just like, okay, so the brand split is dead. That's what you're doing. And I know that they acknowledged that it was kind of officially over in 2013 when they had the unification match between Orton and John Cena with the World Championship and the WWE Championship in the TLC match, but they were like 5 years too late with that. And the reason being is that as soon as you start with this bragging rights nonsense and crossovers and this, that, and the other thing, you completely defeat the purpose of what was behind the brand split. And Survivor Series in recent years has become a microcosm of that. You can't have it built into the schedule that these two are going to collide. And more so, I think it's kind of flat out embarrassing that they've turned Survivor Series into a gimmick pay-per-view. Because over the years, like I said, you could have, you know, teams versus teams always at Survivor Series, but kind of the suspense building up to this pay-per-view is like, okay, well, what team is going to be against what team? Like Bischoff versus Austin or Lesnar versus Kurt Angle. And people don't forget, people often forget that, you know, Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar, you know, Team Angle versus Team Lesnar was almost like the coming out party for John Cena. That's when he turned babyface. And I think by them turning Survivor Series into a gimmick pay-per-view, they're really doing them their own selves a disservice.
It is, it's really become, it's just sad. It's sad, right? Like, there's no other way to put it of what the Survivor Series pay-per-view has now morphed into. And I remember, like, you, you know, looking forward to Survivor Series because of what it meant. You knew it was kind of the unofficial start to the road to WrestleMania. A lot of times, storylines do start at Survivor Series and go all the way to WrestleMania. So you start to use that as a time to, you know, kind of peek through the curtain and see what seeds they may be planting for WrestleMania. Hell, they've even done that at SummerSlam. I mean, I think the Daniel Bryan and Triple H story started at SummerSlam that year when he screwed him out of the world champion or the WWE championship at the time and handed it to Randy Orton. And that evolved all the way to WrestleMania. So I used to look at Survivor Series as that really unofficial kind of premature start to WrestleMania. And now it's just, I mean, look what they did with Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns this past Survivor Series. I mean, that's example number one. Why would you create that rivalry out of no reason? It was supposed to be Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns, by the way. I would have been like totally fine with that, but they didn't want heel versus heel. I think that's stupid. I'm fine with heel versus heel. It can happen. But they wanted Drew versus Roman this year. And I thought it was a terrible move because you want fans to remember or think about rivalries that haven't happened yet, or at least haven't happened in a long time. Yes, we've seen Drew and Roman at WrestleMania. I think it's a forgettable match. But that was, it feels like years and years and years ago, although it was only, what, 2-3 years ago. And you want to build them separately, separate roads, make them parallel, especially guys of that caliber. And they bring them together this year in an exhibition match that has no consequences at all. And now you're like, oh, well, that already happened. Okay, well, it's not going to feel as special when it happens again. And it really, there was nothing to be gained out of that. Nothing. There's nothing on the line. And like you said, it's bragging rights, but isn't every pay-per-view, I guess, by default bragging rights? I mean, if there's no title on the line, every match by default is bragging rights. So I think it's a bastardization of the pay-per-view. They're using the name to create a marketing, I guess, a marketing ploy to say, oh, it's brand versus brand. No one cares about that. No one's loyal to one brand. Has anyone ever met somebody that's like, yeah, I only watch Raw. I don't watch SmackDown. I'm totally against SmackDown. No. Nobody, and if, by the way, if WWE comes to your town, which they will start doing in mid-July, would you say, well, it's Raw, it's not SmackDown, I'm all red all the way? No one, it's not a thing. It's manufactured. It's fake, to use a overused wrestling term. It is. So anyway, if the brand split never happened, I think that you would have not had mid-card stars that WWE kind of planted in that area rise to the top. I think Eddie Guerrero was a massive benefactor of that. Of course, Chris Benoit, the World Heavyweight Championship did help a lot of guys. I mean, the main event of WrestleMania 20 in Madison Square Garden, Michaels, Benoit, and Triple H, awesome main event. You wouldn't have had those kinds of rivalries. And yes, the brand split took a break only to come back. But the whole problem, it boils down to sticking to the effing rules. And I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Well, that's exactly it, because I will still maintain that when done properly, I prefer the brand split as opposed to just, you know, a free for all and all worlds, you know, being mixed with one another. Because in a lot of ways, I do think it's cool that you have two world championships. I think it's cool that you could give two platforms for tag teams. I think it's cool that, you know, you have the U.S. and the Intercontinental Championship kind of always jockeying for position. And almost by default, and, you know, for nostalgic purposes, Intercontinental is higher than the U.S. But in some ways, you know, when John Cena was carrying the U.S. Championship first back in 04 and then later back in 2015, he made that championship feel important. I think there's a lot of benefits to it. But then it was right around when they brought in ECW that they really started loosening the brand split rules. And that's when personally I was just like, okay, well, now you're just, you know, kind of saturating everything and you don't care anymore. And I think that the brand split gave us a lot of historic moments. Like without that brand split, we would have never gotten the massive, you know, swerve, or I don't know if you want to call it a swerve, of John Cena going to Raw and Batista going to SmackDown and taking the respective world championships with them to their new shows. But what I always think back to is when they kind of acknowledge that, you know, the brand split was done, they fused the two, they unified the two championships, with Randy Orton becoming the first ever WWE World Heavyweight Champion. And then I would say it was, what, a year and a half later, they had a new draft with Daniel Bryan as the SmackDown GM, Mick Foley as the Raw GM, obviously Shane at the head of SmackDown, Stephanie at the head of Raw, and they brought back, you know, the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, and they created the Universal Championships. So I'll pitch it to you. When all is said and done, do you prefer, assuming that they're adhering to the brand split rules, like no wild card nonsense or quarterly invitational nonsense, assuming that they stick strictly to their rules, do you prefer it, and do you think the product is better when there is a brand split or not?
Easy answer for me, yes. Now, again, what I think that fewer championships, as I mentioned earlier, are a massive benefactor of one single storyline running through, you know, both brands, and there's no separate worlds. Yes, I think the WWE often creates championships, or you know, like the WWE Tag Team Championships. I don't think they need two separate championships for the tag teams, especially if they've got a thin roster to begin with. I mean, so when you don't focus on the tag teams and you have two tag team championships, you're going to have like the same two teams training back and forth. And so maybe there should be a stipulation where champions are allowed to float, but everyone else stays put and nobody moves for any reason ever. If you do, you're fired. I mean, that should be the rules laid out to the WWE fans. So to answer your question, yes, I think it, again, the biggest thing is it gives guys an opportunity and gals an opportunity to be showcased when they otherwise wouldn't have if they were overshadowed by the bigger stars and they're on both brands. You also get that feeling of, whoa, cool. You know, what if this guy and this guy got together at WrestleMania, or this woman and this woman get together at WrestleMania? It creates rivalries in people's minds and makes you just really want to see them get together. It's a way to create separate worlds where they're not even, they don't speak of one another. They feel separate. Now, again, the problem is they don't feel different other than the roster. As I said at the beginning of the show, they just have different faces. SmackDown, though, does have more of a wrestling identity. Not all the time, but some of the time. The announcers say the same things. It's produced the same. The colors change, and that's it. So perhaps they start to make the production feel a little bit different, and that would help in creating its own identity, as I said. And but yeah, overall, I'm a big fan of it if they stick to the rules and they, you know, they stick to it and have a draft once a year. I think that is the way to do it. What do you think?
Oh, I love the brand split, but I think one of the biggest issues they have, and one thing that bothers me for some reason, and I know I'm in the minority of this, but I hate the fact that they don't have an exclusive manager or commissioner to one show. Like, just the fact that you see Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville on both shows floating back and forth bothers the hell out of me. And I'm not saying you need the days of, let's say, Eric Bischoff being a major part of the Monday Night Raw storyline each and every week, although I thought he was phenomenal in that role, or Paul Heyman / Teddy Long doing it over on SmackDown. But even if you have a guy that shows up bi-weekly or once a month, but he's exclusive to Raw / SmackDown, I think that goes a long way. And I think that we wouldn't have, if it wasn't for this brand split, you know, we wouldn't have seen Bischoff versus Austin, which in a lot of ways was kind of like, you know, the second coming, but obviously not to the same extent, of Austin versus McMahon. And I also think that, you know, would that United States Championship ever have survived as long as it has? Like, before I completely answered, do you think the U.S. title would have, you know, lasted this long if not for the brand split?
No, they would have gotten rid of it. It would have been like the European Championship.
Exactly. And I think that in a lot of ways that this brand split gave us moments that we would have never, ever have seen if not for it. Like, I remember even in the mid-2000s, it seemed like every WrestleMania they would have interpromotional matches, like Kane versus Undertaker for the Return of the Dead Man at WrestleMania 20, or Angle versus HBK, one of the best WrestleMania non-title matches of all time. Like, it was really cool. Or even in the Rumble match, when they would always do this spot, it seemed every year, where like there'd be like this brawl of eight guys, and then they would all like kind of separate to either side, and the Raw guys would line up and the SmackDown guys would line up and they would fight each other. And I liked the fact that you know, we only saw Cole and Taz on SmackDown and JR and Lawler on Raw. And, you know, even the fact that they just switched Graves over to Raw for no good reason after SmackDown, like, that bothered me. So in some ways, I wish it wasn't the case, because they just do things that piss me off to no end. But then in other ways, I look at the product even nowadays, and I'm just like, well, this guy wouldn't have been this big if everything was kind of, you know, mixed together. Like, and I think a good example of that right now is Apollo Crews. Like, would Apollo Crews, who I think in the past, ever since he turned heel and adopted this his gimmick from it's Ghana, is that where he's from?
Nigeria.
Nigeria, that's it, sorry. Like, which I think low-key has been one of the best gimmicks and storylines since before WrestleMania. I don't think he would have ever gotten this opportunity had all the, you know, all the whole, the entire roster been mixed. And I think he's really elevated that Intercontinental Championship even higher than when Big E had it. You know, would Big E be given this platform as a single star if they were all mixed? No, absolutely not. So I think that all in all, I like it when they adhere to their own rules. And for the most part, ever since they switched to Fox, I think they've been pretty good at it. So I'm going to give them credit where when it's due. But as soon as they start loosening up on it, it pisses me off to no end.
No, I agree. And, you know, kind of wrapping this thing up, I think you're right about Apollo Crews and the current product. I mean, could I do without Commander Aziz or Dabba Kato carrying a giant Q-tip to the ring? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it is what it is. I've certainly seen worse. I'm fine with it. But, you know, you're right. Apollo Crews is an example of a current beneficiary of the brand split. Apollo Crews would have just been the smiling, you know, just athletic guy that is from NXT, and that's all you know about him. That's all we knew about him for like 6 years. And it's amazing what he could do with the Intercontinental Championship. As you said, I think he's done more service to the IC belt than Big E has. And that's so crazy to say, given where they both came from star power. And so, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think they'll probably continue with the brand split into the future, at least the foreseeable future, because I think they see that value. I don't think they're dumb enough to, you know, obviously be blind to this massive benefit to give guys and gals a more of an opportunity, unless, you know, if there wasn't a brand split. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of it as if it's done right. And, you know, I could do without the WWE draft, the way they did it, not this year, but the previous year with the war rooms and all that kind of crap. I think that went away this year. And I'm fine with just, you know, standing at the podium and each person gets a pick like Bischoff and Vince McMahon did back in, the beginning. So I like that, or just doing the whole, you know, what is it when they put, it's that little rotating metal, what do you call
it?
Yeah,
and you spin the ball.
Yeah, you spin the ball. Like, yeah. And you just pick a guy out and there's your name, which just ironically always seem to be the top names at the beginning of the show. Yeah, I mean, like, they just happen to pick The Rock or Austin, right? But I don't know. I think it's a structure that works if they stick to the rules, but that's the big thing, is they don't. If that's the worst thing that happens and we have to all deal with them not explaining why somebody's on Raw or SmackDown when they shouldn't be, at the same time, though, also getting to benefit those people who wouldn't otherwise get spotlighted, I think that still overshadows the insanity of their rule breaking. But what are your final thoughts on all this?
Well, my final thought is just a question to you, and then I'll answer just a quick one. Since they restarted the brand split in 2016, the summer, and they debuted the Universal Championship, what one superstar do you think has been the biggest beneficiary of it?
Ooh. I mean, Drew McIntyre is interesting, because Drew wouldn't have, I think he probably would have eventually risen to the top since 2016. Oh, man.
Because that's when they started it in the summer and Shane came back and all that.
Here, let me, while you're doing it, I'm going to cheat a little bit. Why don't you give me your answer? Because I want to see who was actually drafted where in 2016, because that's going to depend on my answer. So you take this one first.
Well, for me, it's simple. It's AJ Styles, because AJ Styles showed up in WWE at the Royal Rumble in 2016. And, you know, early on, he kind of had a program with Chris Jericho, his first ever Mania match. And then he kind of had that very historic program with John Cena in the summer. But that started off only as a personal rivalry. But he goes over to SmackDown, and he was one of the first guys to really emphasize that he was, you know, SmackDown through and through. And he was the face that runs the face. And SmackDown was the house that AJ Styles built. And I think he would have eventually got there, but would he have won a WWE championship inside the first 8 months of him being in WWE? I'm not sure. And, you know, a month after he was drafted to SmackDown, he defeated Ambrose for the WWE championship, and he was the WWE champion for almost the entirety of 2018. And I really think he legitimized SmackDown on even footing with Monday Night Raw when they restarted with the brand split in 2016, because before that, for the preceding 5-6 years, SmackDown had become the secondary clear-cut B show to Monday Night Raw. So I think AJ Styles, by far, because he legitimized himself as a main eventer in WWE, and he legitimized SmackDown for how good of a run he had with the title on both occasions.
That's probably, yeah, as I'm looking at the drafts over the, you know, since 2016, I think that AJ Styles is probably the number one. I mean, you could say, well, Finn Balor, who was drafted to Raw in the first round too, although he got sent back to NXT. So Finn Balor, though, while he was the first Universal Champion and we all know the injury that happened, you know, he got sent back to NXT, but I think that's the best thing, number one, that ever happened to him. And NXT benefited massively from Finn Balor coming back. And now the rumor is that he wants to come back to the main roster. But Finn Balor was a beneficiary of that. As I'm looking down the list here, I mean, Sami Zayn, I don't know if that really would have benefited him that much. Kevin Owens, they kind of...
Yeah.
You know, those two guys, would they have gotten the spotlight if the draft didn't exist? Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. The way that they've treated both guys over the years have really told me that they feel they have big stars on their hands, given that neither one has been champion in, you know, Sami Zayn's never been WWE or Universal Champion, and Kevin Owens was Universal Champion for, you know, several months because of Triple H handing it to him until he got to, what, Goldberg, of course. So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, John Cena, AJ Styles, you're right. I think AJ Styles is probably the guy that you point to and go, yeah, definitely the one that would have benefited the most from the last 5 years. So, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here today, as always. And next week, I'm sure we'll come up with another great topic. But before you go, any final thoughts and or social media that you want to share?
Well, as always, get me on Twitter at adamarco25 and catch my rivalry show that dropped a couple hours ago. So, but, you know, I'll be back here every Saturday with you. And, you know, I think we have a good thing going here right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, Triple H versus Roman Reigns, guys, is the rivalry this week. And you may be as angry as we are listening to the audio that you provided with them at WrestleMania 32. And, yeah, looking back at what Roman Reigns was compared to what he is now, especially given what they were doing, it angered me. So definitely.
The most negative rivalry I've yet to cover here in almost a year of doing it by far.
Yeah, no doubt. But everyone go check that out. And Anthony, thanks so much for joining us this week. And thanks to all the patrons who listen to this. You guys are what make this show possible. So all right. Well, we will talk to you soon, Anthony.
Take it easy, man.
All right. Bye.